So excited to be here with you guys today. Just a couple things about what we're going to talk about, our agenda, I guess we'd say. We're going to start out about talking about what an influencer is, how to find them, how to build a relationship with them, and the things you should be doing to work with them first. And then we're going to go into case studies and give you some examples. And then at the end, we'll also have Q&A. So Jeff said, yes, I'm Julie, the Strategic Alliance Manager. What is that? Actually, Alliance Manager, as an Alliance Manager for Robert Half, I manage our Alliance program. Alliance is kind of being another word for a partnership, partners. So we actually work with trade associations, other companies, lots of different types of influencers or influencers that we call alliances, and I manage that program for Robert Half. My background is in fine art and photography. I've worked for high-profile governments, so I'm kind of come from a very diverse background. Been at Robert Half for about a year and a half now. Kurt?
Well, I got my start in journalism many years ago, and that sort of helped me master the lost art of listening, which is kind of a useful thing to have in marketing, because we're always sort of pushing information out, but listening is a really important part of communication. I transitioned into PR like a lot of journalists do, and sort of learned how to use storytelling to connect targeted audiences with experiences or products that they value. Then I went into some senior marketing roles where I was dragged kicking and screaming into more analytical thinking. Didn't think of myself as an analytical thinker, but I was sort of surprised to find that that I was actually good at that and I enjoyed it, and I began to use data to drive my storytelling, which came in handy when content marketing became a thing. It just was a perfect storm for me, content marketing, bringing together sort of the analytical and the creative. So it's a really fun field for me. So I work at Robert Half, which is, and so does Julie. Robert Half is the largest specialized staffing firm in the world. We have several lines of business focused on different industries. So one of them focuses on lawyers, another one focuses on finance and accounting, and so on and so forth. I work for the master brand, and Julie and I also work for these two lines of business that you see here on the board. The creative group focuses on marketing professionals, PR people, and designers mainly. At the back of the room on that table, there are some salary guides. Pick one up. They're great for job seekers and hiring managers. And basically, they tell you for your title, for your role, what you should be making. Now, that varies by market, so you can go to our website and punch in your area code, your zip code, excuse me, and it'll sort of account for those regional differences. It's great for hiring managers just to know that they're paying the right rate and they're being competitive in the marketplace. So that's the creative group. That's my tribe. And our other brand that we work on is Robert Half Technology. And not surprisingly, that focuses on tech workers. That can be anybody from anybody that works in big data, a network administrator, it can be help desk, developers are a big part of the business, anything tech related. So basically, we help people get great jobs, and we help companies find great talent that will propel their business forward. Oh, what's that? Eek.
Anyway, so I thought I would share kind of a overview of who Robert Half Alliance, our alliances that we currently work with. The Alliance program is a little more kind of larger partnerships that we've built over X amount of time. Some of these are historic, some of them are new. So for example, for TCG, one of our main demographics are graphic designers. That's a target audience for us. So we actually built a partnership with GDUSA as a media partner to target that particular audience. And each alliance we work with in a different way. We build programs based on the alliance's needs and our company's needs. So it's really, it's not an in-the-box solution, it's an a la carte solution depending on who we're working with. So you can kind of see a sample of our TCG alliances on the left. And then for Robert Half Technology on the right, you know, we partner with big companies like Cisco and Microsoft and Oracle, but we also partner with trade associations like Women in Technology International. and we use their influence that they have with their audience by partnering with them. So it's kind of a little recap of the main ones that I work on, and I kind of manage the process with each one of these partners.
So obviously, in these two lines of business, we deal with a wide range of roles. I think there are 75 plus for the creative group and 120 plus for Robert Half Technology. And you know, just a few examples up here. You know, Julie and I have expertise in some of these areas, you know, like marketing and PR where we've worked. Other areas, to be honest with you, we have a more superficial understanding of what these people deal with on a daily basis. I don't code in Python. Julie doesn't code in Java. We understand generally what the problems that they deal with, but we can't claim to be experts. Our recruiters really are, because they're dealing every day with job descriptions and they're talking to the hiring manager. So they really are subject matter experts. We're marketing people that have an understanding of these different areas, but we're not going to pretend to be experts in every little role that we place. I guess my clicker's not going to work. We'll just do it like this. That's all right. So really, that challenges us to sort of figure out what our expertise is and work with our audience to sort of assert some sort of a topical authority without being a poser. So there's this idea of borrowed authority. And we're not going to fake our expertise with this audience because that can sort of blow up in your face. I'll give you an example. We had a blog post for Robert Half Technology a while ago focused on Swift, which is the language that app developers for Apple apps use. And I was just sort of thinking, how can I distribute this content beyond our typical social channels and our email and that sort of thing? How many of you are familiar with Quora? Raise your hand if you've ever heard of Quora. Got two. Okay, so Quora is basically a website where you can just go and ask a question, and a subject matter expert will save the day, show up, and give you an answer. It's pretty amazing. You can follow different thought leaders. And so I went in there, and I just typed in Swift app developer in the bar and found a number of questions that related to the content that I had. So I thought, hooray, I've got an answer to their questions. So I went to those posts, said, here's the answer to your questions. Just go to our website. Patted myself on the back, felt like I was doing a great job. And then the questions started coming, really specific technical questions that I had no clue about. So my point to this story is you have to be prepared to, if you're going to position yourself as an authority, you have to be prepared for the questions that follow. So, you know, in that situation, I would have to go find somebody that actually knew the answer. And so you need to think through, like, what that iteration looks like. So we've sought authorities that our audiences respect, and by partnering with them, we sort of get this halo effect for the brand. So basically, the two big things we're looking for are people that have known credibility in their field. And ideally, they have a pretty large social media following. It doesn't do you a whole lot of good if you've got a subject matter expert and you can't leverage the audience that they bring with them. You can do some things with them, but we're really looking for both. Julie kind of looks for a different type of influencer and has a kind of a different vetting process.
Yeah, one of the things that I kind of learned the hard way, and a tip that I would give you all, is that if you're looking to work with an influencer on a broad scale or in a bigger way, build a program with them or do something that requires a lot of resources, think about who your internal stakeholders are in your company. Who needs to kind of be part of that conversation? Who do you need to check in with before you identify an influencer and you kind of go down that path? I went a little too far down the path before checking with our internal stakeholders. So think about who that is for you. You know, for us, I kind of call it passing the corporate brand sniff test, where everyone has to kind of understand and agree. You want to make sure that those key stakeholders are on board. And then lastly, just consider that when you're working with somebody, you're actually going to inherit their entire reputation, right? So you don't get to say, oh, I like this one part about this group over here that I'm going to work with them, but all these other components of who they are, I don't want to work. You get the whole reputation. good, bad, and ugly. So do your vetting process. What is your vetting process? What do you need to check, both internally and externally, to see, yeah, this person actually aligns well with my brand. Their content aligns with my brand. Everybody's going to be on board, and then you can kind of go forward. So those are the main steps. Lessons learned a few times, I would say.
Yeah, we had one case with the creative group recently where just sort of discovered this graphic designer, and a huge part of the creative group audience is graphic designers. We found this graphic design thought leader that had a huge social media following, very respected in his field, had published books and taught at a renowned university, and we started to get excited about maybe doing some things with him, doing a Q&A on the website and so forth. But when I dove into Twitter and looked at his Twitter feed, there were some pretty strong political views being expressed there. And as a pretty huge corporation, we don't take a stance on political issues. And so we knew that anybody that noticed our relationship with this partner might go into their Twitter feed, see that really strong political commentary, and we would have that type of halo effect. And it might not be the intended halo effect we were looking for. So to Julie's point, you get all of their reputation. So why is it cutting these off a little bit? We'll live with it. It's not that bad. So Julie and I have a couple different ways of sort of identifying our influencers to work with. There are some brands up here that you might want to check out. I'm not necessarily endorsing any one of them. They all have a free version where you can just try it out for 30 days or so, get a feel for it, and then there's a more robust version that you can pay for. I've used all of the free versions and haven't yet paid for the more robust version of any of these. I used BuzzSumo actually a week or two ago, just kind of an interesting, quick and dirty influencer campaign. It was Data Privacy Day, and Robert Half Technology deals with a lot of cybersecurity people. And we knew that this is an issue that they care about, and they work in that field every day. So we had some survey info from Robert Half Technology that we thought they would be interested in. It was basically had to do with how CIOs protect their corporate data, you know, two-step authentication and all these other things, and what percentage of them use these different things. So I just went to Canva, made a quick and dirty graphic that you can make a gorgeous graphic in 5-10 minutes. If you've never used Canva, I do recommend it. So I made a quick graphic, and using BuzzSumo, I could do two things. Number one, I could just sort through our tens of thousands of existing followers and just identify which ones were most influential, and basically send the graphic to them individually. So Vala Afshar, who's a big tech leader, he's got 109,000 followers on Twitter. Just send him the graphic, thought you might be interested. He retweeted it within a minute. This guy's just a power tweeter. So several of these people just retweeted it immediately, and within minutes I had 500,000 people exposed to our brand that never probably even knew we existed before. And these are coming from established thought leaders. That took no money, it took very little time. BuzzSumo also, you can type in a phrase, like I typed in data privacy, and it gave me thought leaders that weren't following Robert Half Technology, that were totally off my radar. These were people that wrote for the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. They were nonprofit organizations that were focused exclusively on data privacy. I knew that they would be interested in the topic. Again, just tweeted the image at them, thought you might be interested. The whole thing took me, you know, from creating the graphic to tweeting it out to people, less than an hour, and the response was phenomenal. So that's how some of these tools can work, and it's real low-hanging fruit if you're not already doing it. Julie has a couple other ways of sort of identifying sort of corporate influencers. Yeah.
So don't discount some of the other resources you may have in your company. So, you know, Robert Half is really large. We're a global organization, so we have lots of branch offices and a large staff. You know, you might be in a smaller company, but always think about your employees. Are you checking in with them? Who are they following? Who are they reading? What publications are they reading? Check in with your leadership teams, your CEOs. you know, ask them regularly what they're seeing in the influencer space. What I found actually in the past few months in doing so, there was one particular group. I checked in across the nation, and there was one group that 50% of the people, 50% of our branch offices were like, oh, we're working with this influencer. And I was like, oh, wow, we're not. Let's do something with them. So check in with your people. Ask them directly. Leverage your employees internally and the people you know externally to find influencers as well. So I thought I'd take a moment. Once you identify the influencer, how do you kind of build the relationship with them? Or how do you go about determining what you're going to do with them? Is it just sharing a tweet? Or are you going to build a program together? What does that look like? So there's a few things that I do. The first thing is I actually start the conversation when I first reach out to this person about asking what their goals are. Try to learn about them as much as you possibly can first. So start the conversation very much open to learning and asking questions to understand the other side. You almost have to like step into their world and put on their hat and try and understand who they are. You know, what you'll do, I have these two spheres, right? Our goal is to identify the sweet spot in between that you can actually, where your goals align or where there are synergies, that's where you want to focus. But you don't actually know what that is unless you ask and you're learning about the person. So start there. Make sure that you don't start the conversation with money. We work with a lot of different influencers in a lot of different ways, and sometimes it involves money and sometimes it doesn't. Don't start the conversation with money. If somebody goes there and they tell you how much it's going to cost to work with me, press pause, say, actually, I'd like to learn a little bit about who you are and your goals and what you're trying to accomplish. Go there, right? It could be that at the end of the day, it will be a relationship that requires a money exchange, but you've got to start with the goal setting and the understanding of the other person first. And then it may end up being money in the end. That's how I started. It's usually a little more effective that way. So once you kind of identify the who and the how, you gotta make sure that, how am I checking in with this person? What is my schedule like? Am I emailing them? Am I setting up a monthly call? Like, what does this partner or this influencer need from me? Identify that from the very beginning. Be flexible. You are 50% of the relationship. They're the other 50%. So it's kind of like personal relationships. You've got to be really flexible. Stuff happens. You got to kind of roll with the punches. At any given time, you should always be able to answer the question, what's in it for me and what's in it for them? If somebody asks you, oh, well, what is this person getting out of working with you? And you're like, I don't know. That's not good. You got to answer that question for both sides. You kind of both have to have a mutually beneficial reason for working with each other. And then, hey, it may not work out. It may be a partnership that you try one thing and you're like, okay, maybe not someone I want to work with in the future, or maybe you build something long term. But make sure you're kind of constantly checking that this partner is helping you meet your goals. And if they're not, consider moving on.
Come on. You can do it. Seriously? There we go. Okay, so now I'm going to do a lightning round of just quick examples of things we've done with influencers. My first caveat before I do any of this is I'm not claiming that any of this is rocket science. This is stupid simple. Anybody can do this, and that's why we're sharing it. Maybe you've already done some of this. I hope so. Maybe it'll spark an idea of just something slightly different that you could do. So our first example is for Robert Half Technology, one of our many focuses is women in technology and girls in technology. You may or may not have heard that there's a real problem in the tech world. It's very, hello. Oh. Wi-Fi. I've seen this happen at every session I've been to so far. So we're really trying to target women in technology. And we had this cute cartoon that dealt with helping girls view themselves as somebody who might be a coder someday. Just kind of an adorable little cartoon. And I just tweeted it out as I usually do and shared on, you know, the various social channels. And our PR manager decided to tag someone when she shared it. And that someone was Isis Anchaly. I don't know if any of you have heard of her. She sort of started a little revolution a while ago. She's in her 20s. She's an attractive woman, and she's a coder. And someone said she would consistently have people say to her, "Well, you don't look like an engineer," which is just a really sexist thing to say to someone if you really think about it. And it annoyed her enough that I think she wrote a blog post about it. And she started this hashtag, "I look like an engineer." And all of these other female engineers jumped on it. And it just became something that was larger than life. And she got a huge social media following. So our PR manager was savvy enough to know, hey, I think Isis Anchaly would love this cartoon. So she tagged her in the tweet. Isis did love it. She shared it with her audience. And that tweet was our biggest social media hit of the third quarter. It blew away some paid campaigns that had a lot of muscle behind them. So every once in a while, just throw it out there. You know, it takes 1 second to tag somebody you think might be interested. And if you really think through what their interests are, then you're going to have a pretty good batting average. You're going to hit on some of them, and it's really going to propel your social media efforts. So this one took a lot more effort, a lot more time. The creative group, the salary guides you'll see back there, every year they have a theme. This year the theme is secret sauce. So we're the secret sauce to your hiring needs. We're the secret sauce to your job search. It's a theme that's pretty malleable. And so we were talking around the office about, you know, the core of the brand is creativity. Whether you're a marketing professional or a PR professional or a graphic designer, creativity is at the heart of that brand. And so we started to think about what is your secret sauce for creative inspiration? What sparks creativity for you? For some people, it might be going to a rock concert, getting all pumped up. For other people, it might be a quiet walk in the woods or going to a nature preserve or something like that. So we decided to have a photo contest and get some user-generated content and have those folks be our influencers. So we reached out to a couple people that we work with. We work with an agency, Ketchum PR, pretty well-known international brand in PR. And we asked a couple of folks that work there how they found their creative inspiration. So Suzanne on the left, in her office, she colors. This is a pretty high-powered PR agency, and she's in her office coloring. And everybody respects that, because that's how she gets creative. Her colleague Jim, he might be found in his office with his headphones on, shadow boxing. He gets all pumped up, he's got the music going, and when the blood gets flowing, the ideas flow too. So two totally different approaches. We shared those. And it just as examples to prime the pump and get people thinking about where they get their creative inspiration, invited them to send in their photos. We used a tool called Pixly, which I do recommend. They're fantastic. And we offered a free trip to South by Southwest to the winner of this contest. So a pretty good prize, and we had some cash prizes as well, and pretty much I think everybody enjoys cash. So we knew there would be a lot of interest. There was. We got a lot of entries. And built into the contest was an incentive for them to get their friends and family to go to our website to vote for their image because they want to go to South by Southwest. And what we know just intuitively is that graphic designers tend to have graphic designer friends, marketing people tend to have marketing friends. So when they're sharing that information saying, "Vote for me," people that are just like them in the same field that we market to were being driven to our website. And they may or may not have been familiar with our brand. A lot of them weren't. And so while they were there just to vote for their friend's photo, they said, "Oh, I think I'm going to look around here. Oh, they have a salary guide. I wonder if I'm being paid enough. Oh, I can upload my resume. I think I'll do that right now." So for very low cost of getting this contest going and using this user-generated content, we drove hundreds of people to submit a photo and tens of thousands of people to come to our website. And it was a pretty successful campaign for us. Okay, here's one that just happened in our office in San Ramon, California. Julie invited me one day. She said, "Hey, they're having a luncheon some veterans that have transitioned from tours of duty into the workforce. This is another audience that we target for Robert Half Technology, is veterans that work in tech jobs. And basically, these people all talked at this luncheon about transitioning into the workforce and the challenges that they saw. And I haven't served in the military. Julie hasn't served in the military. So it was a learning opportunity for us just to sort of understand our audience better. And so, you know, at one point, just as an example, this guy joked about, you know, his first civilian job after many years of being in Iraq. And he said his boss apologized to him for the hotel room he got for him for a conference like this. And he said, you know, I had to laugh. I mean, the room had a door, it had a mattress. I mean, I had a television. I thought it was fantastic. And I don't think that's very funny necessarily, it's cute, but the room was roaring. These guys thought it was hilarious because they'd served in some pretty brutal conditions out in the field in war zones. And so they understood, you know, that guy's point of view. And it helped us understand their sense of humor. And there are many other things that they said that day that were sort of like, interesting. And so we reached out to, you know, the guy in the red jacket here, Tyler, and we said, can we take you to lunch? We're very big on lunch, basically. So we took Tyler to lunch, asked him a few more questions, learned more about where veterans hang out when they come home from their tours of duty. And all the things that we would need to know to market to this group. So I guess the main point here is really just like, there's only so much you can do from behind your computer. And as social media people, we tend to hunker down behind our screen and we think we're being social, but sometimes we're really not. You need to really get out there and meet face to face, invite somebody to lunch, ask a bunch of questions, and you will have that aha moment that sort of drives your next big campaign. Okay, final one here. Raise your hand if you are familiar with a live streaming app like Periscope, Meerkat, or Blab. Few people, yeah. Okay, so it's kind of taking off in the content marketing world. So several months ago when Periscope was really just taking off, I was obsessed with it and really thinking through what a great tool it is, again, for interactive communication, not just us pushing information out. How can we listen to our audience better? The guy in the middle here on the screen is my good friend, Kurt. He's a developer for Autodesk, huge technology company in Marin County. And I said, you know, Kurt, could I just interview you on Periscope? Just hold up my phone and ask you a few questions and then take some questions from the audience. And he said, yeah, sure, no problem. And then, you know, we wanted to show a little more diversity because it's not all about middle-aged white guys coding. So we reached out to Amy on the left, who is on the board of Women Who Code, and she works for a company called Lookout, which does security for mobile devices. And then on the right is George. He works for Protivity, which is one of our lines of business focused on the consulting business. They're all different types of developers, and they all took very different career paths. So like Kurt in the middle took a very traditional path. He got a computer science degree, and he sort of talked about how he took that route. Amy was in a totally different career and then decided to go to a coding boot camp and did that for 8 weeks, and that was enough to land a great tech job. So she had a very different story to tell, and coding boot camps are blowing up right now, so we knew a lot of people would be interested in her experience. And George was a lawyer who just sort of got sick of his field and decided to go back to school, so he got his master's degree. So they all talked about their different career paths, and we took questions from the audience, and it was a great back and forth. And again, we weren't asserting ourselves as any great thought leader. I know nothing about what a developer deals with on a day-to-day basis, but they were talking some pretty hardcore tech. And some ideas came out of this conversation, like at one point Kurt said, everything Java can do, something else can do better. And that snarky little comment made our blog editor say, well, that's really interesting. Maybe we could do a blog post about that. And after our hour-long conversation, I had the video that I could put on YouTube. And so anybody that couldn't watch it live could watch it anytime they want. It's available for you to check out if you'd like. So we got many more views after the fact. And then we could slice up that video and use it in email or just in a Vine or you name it, any number of ways. So this is just the gift that keeps on giving, this content. And again, it costs nothing except for our time and a little bit of planning. So they were our influencers for developers. And we're thinking about making this into more of an ongoing series where we talk with help desk professionals and they talk about their help desk disasters. Or you name it, any field has interesting stories to tell, and you can just turn it into a series just like a podcast. And it's literally as easy as just like hitting the record button, holding it, asking a few questions, taking a few questions from the audience. Again, it's not rocket science, but you can pull in some people that weren't familiar with your brand, and it worked really well for us. So those are our quick examples.